Today is Friday, March the 13th, and you are listening to the World Socialist Website. United Nations condemns Iran's self-defense strikes amid American imperialism's war of extermination. By Jordan Shilton. The United Nations Security Council, the UNSC, effectively endorsed the US-Israeli war against Iran Wednesday with the passage of Resolution 2817, 2026. The text condemns in the strongest terms Iran's retaliatory strikes on the Gulf states, while saying nothing about the nearly two-week-long bombardment of the country of 90 million people by American imperialism and its Israel ally. The resolution's pretext is that Iran launched retaliatory strikes against seven countries: Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Jordan. But all seven host US military bases actively being used to wage the war on Iran, from the 5th Fleet headquarters in Bahrain to Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar, to Al Dhafra in the UAE. These states are not neutral bystanders. They are, in effect, combatants. Iranian strikes on their territories were launched in self-defense and have killed approximately 11 civilians. The US and Israel have killed over 1,300 people in Iran alone. The resolution did not even note the fact that the United States, led by the fascist Donald Trump, launched an unprovoked war of aggression against Iran, a historically oppressed country, on February 28th. Ably assisted by its Zionist ally, Washington carried out within a matter of hours the targeted assassination of Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khomeini and dozens of other leading political and military personnel of an ostensibly sovereign state. Within less than 2 weeks of carpet bombing, American and Israeli missiles have slaughtered thousands of Iranian civilians, including over 160 children in a single strike on a girls' school. The war criminals have struck dozens of hospitals and schools, sought to disrupt energy supplies, and poisoned the environment by destroying oil refineries, and forced millions of people to flee their homes in Iran and Lebanon, where the Zionist regime has also undertaken air and ground operations. None of this rated so much as a mention. The resolution passed by 13 votes to zero, reading as if the UN representatives had simply transcribed American imperialism's war aims. The press release announcing passage of the resolution stated, "It specifically condemned Iran's attacks against residential areas and civilian objects, demanding their immediate cessation, while also demanding that Tehran halt its threats, provocations and actions aimed at interfering with maritime trade, as well as support to proxy groups across the region." Countries voting in favour of this outrageous document included the permanent members, Britain, France and the United States, as well as non-permanent members Bahrain, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Denmark, Greece, Latvia, Liberia, Pakistan, Panama, and Somalia. Particularly significant is the fact that Russia and China, both permanent members of the UNSC, and thus in a position to veto the resolution, chose instead to abstain and allow it to pass. In so doing, they handed American imperialism political backing for its war of annihilation against Iran. In a miserable face-saving exercise, Russia tabled a second resolution, which it knew would never pass, calling for an end to the war and a diplomatic solution. Only 4 out of 15 members could bring themselves to support it. This pathetic performance flows from the social nature and interests of these two capitalist regimes. Despite NATO's systematic encirclement of the country and provocation of the US-NATO war against Russia and Ukraine, Russian President Vladimir Putin still believes that a compromise with Washington that recognizes the Russian oligarchy's right to exploit its own working class and control a sphere of influence is possible. By backing Washington's demolition of Iran and the plundering of its resources, the Kremlin, operating on the old Stalinist mantra of peaceful coexistence with imperialism, hopes it can cut a deal on Ukraine and US investment with Trump. As for the Chinese government, headed by Xi Jinping, a major consideration in the immediate term is Trump's impending visit to Beijing at the end of this month. In order to maintain the prospect of Chinese capitalism securing an economic arrangement with the US, the Stalinist regime is more than willing to provide a diplomatic victory to the war criminal Trump, and at the expense of its ostensible ally, Iran. But the fantasies shared by the ruling cliques in Beijing and Moscow are incompatible with the imperatives of American imperialism. A new partition of the globe, and its resources among the major powers, is well underway, and the US is not about to peacefully accept any challenge to its hegemonic position. On the contrary, Washington is sending a message to Beijing and Moscow that they are next on the hit list. For more than three decades, Washington has sought to offset its accelerating economic decline by deploying its still overwhelming military superiority in a series of bloody wars of aggression. Continuing this course, American imperialism's war on Iran aims in the first place to eliminate the main regional obstacle to US dominance over the Middle East, a key energy exporting region that also is strategically located for trade routes between Asia and Europe. However, the war's more fundamental goal is the further strategic and economic isolation of Russia and China, with the latter in particular depending to a significant extent on cheap Iranian oil imports. The war began less than 2 months after Washington's abduction of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and the installation of a pliant puppet in Caracas, which was, until January 2026, another major oil exporter to China and is now being turned into a fiefdom of the American energy conglomerates. All of the imperialist powers have today cast aside any remaining restraints imposed by international law and diplomacy following the horrors of the Second World War. As the World Socialist website explained over 2 years ago, all the red lines that demarcate civilization from barbarism are being effaced. The war of annihilation against Iran, which with Wednesday's vote now has received a stamp of approval from over 140 governments through their co-sponsoring of Resolution 2817, was preceded by Israel's imperialist-backed genocide of the Palestinians in Gaza. This slaughter was backed by the imperialist powers in North America and Europe, who not only supplied the Zionist butchers with weaponry, but systematically suppressed all forms of opposition to genocide at home. Trump, at the head of the world's most powerful imperialist state, gives the most grotesque and repulsive expression to imperialist barbarism. His wars of aggression abroad go hand in hand with his operation to establish a fascist dictatorship at home. But the direction of travel in the ruling class is everywhere the same. Just this week, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen declared in a speech, "Europe can no longer be a custodian for the old world order, for a world that has gone and will not return." French President Emmanuel Macron is expanding his country's nuclear arsenal and pledging to station weapons throughout the continent, while Germany's ruling elite is preparing another grab for world power by spending 1 trillion euro on its military. To impose the full burden of these war budgets on the working class, ruling elites across the continent are paving the way for far-right parties to take power. The belief of government officials in Moscow and Beijing that one can avert imperialist world war by means of clever diplomacy and a multipolar capitalist development by rebalancing relations between competing nation-states is delusional. Over 30 years ago, leading Stalinist bureaucrats convinced themselves that if only they dissolved the Soviet Union and restored capitalism, the imperialists would welcome them into the circle of great powers and the world capitalist market with open arms. Then, as now, their national schemes for capitalist development collide with the objective contradiction of world capitalism between the globalized economy and the division of the world into nation-states, a contradiction that is driving the great powers into a Third World War. Leon Trotsky addressed these positions during a previous period of capitalist breakdown in the 1930s. With the imperialist powers racing towards the Second World War, the Stalinist bureaucracy in the Soviet Union broke with any remaining vestiges of the program of World Socialist Revolution, turned the Comintern into the chief disruptor and betrayer of the international working class, and focused the Soviet Union's foreign policy on building diplomatic ties with the imperialists through the League of Nations to preserve the bureaucracy's privileged position. Trotsky skewered the fiction of imperialist diplomacy, writing in 1936, "The League, in its defense of the status quo, is not an organization of peace, but an organization of violence, of the imperialist minority over the overwhelming majority of mankind. This order can be maintained only with the help of continuous wars, little and big, today in the colonies, tomorrow between the great powers. The only basis to stop imperialist war is the mobilization of the international working class on a revolutionary socialist program." As David North stressed at Sunday's World Socialist website webinar on halting the war against Iran, socialists must not follow the war map, but the map of the class struggle. The urgency of this orientation is laid bare by the UNSC vote. While there is no principled opposition among any of the world's governments to the slaughter of the Iranian masses and the risking of the lives of millions more throughout the region, opposition to war among workers around the world is already strong and will escalate as the economic consequences of the war take effect. The task before the International Committee of the Fourth International and its socialist equality parties is to arm this burgeoning movement with a socialist program to overthrow capitalism, the root cause of imperialist war. Treasury Secretary Besant says US will escort ships through Strait of Hormuz as Iran war spirals. By Andre Damon. US Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said on Thursday that the US Navy will begin escorting commercial vessels through the Strait of Hormuz, a major escalation that would place US warships directly in the line of Iranian fire with a high likelihood of casualties. As soon as it is militarily possible, the US Navy, perhaps with an international coalition, will be escorting vessels through, Besant told Sky News. The US-Israeli war on Iran, now in its 13th day, has triggered a cascading regional crisis centered on the Strait of Hormuz, the waterway through which 20% of the world's oil passes. Iran effectively closed the strait within days of the war's outbreak on February 28th, ordering over 150 tankers to anchor and declaring that not 1 litre of oil would pass. Tanker traffic has dropped 70%. On Wednesday, Iran's newly appointed supreme leader, Mojtaba Khamenei, issued his first public statement, vowing to keep the strait closed and open new fronts. Iranian drone boats and missiles have struck multiple commercial vessels, 6 on Wednesday alone, and CNN reported on March 10th that Iran has begun laying mines in the waterway. Brent crude has surged from $70 to over $100, briefly touching $119, despite the IEA authorizing a record release of 400 million barrels from strategic reserves, what the agency called the largest supply disruption in the history of the global oil market. Analysts predict it could rise to as much as $200 a barrel. US gasoline prices have risen 20% in 2 weeks. European gas prices are up 58%, and fertilizer prices have surged, as roughly 30% of the world's fertilizer exports transit the strait. The Hill reported on Thursday that naval experts warned the escort mission would be extraordinarily dangerous. Brian Clark, an expert in naval operations with the Hudson Institute, explained the core problem. The challenge is going to be dealing with the proximity of the drone launchers and the missile launchers that are going to be along the Iranian coast. He added, the issue is that you only have a couple of minutes once the launcher comes out before the missiles are going to get on top of you, because you're only talking about 3 or 4 miles from the shoreline to the transit lane. The strait is just 21 miles wide at its narrowest point. Senator Chris Murphy responded to the escort proposal bluntly. They had no plan. Energy Secretary Chris Wright acknowledged on CNBC the same day that the Navy is simply not ready and that escort operations could begin only by the end of this month. Also on Thursday, a US KC-135 Stratotanker went down in western Iraq with 6 crew members aboard. CENTCOM called it an apparent accident during a refueling operation. The IRGC said it was shot down by Iranian air defences, and that all 6 crew were killed. The IRGC claimed on Wednesday that it had targeted the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier, and that the ship is withdrawing toward the US. US officials denied the carrier came under attack, and released photographs showing the Lincoln operating normally in the Gulf of Oman, where it has remained throughout the war without entering the Persian Gulf. However, the Pentagon acknowledged that Iranian vessels approached the carrier and were fired on, and that a fire broke out aboard the ship. Separately, the USS Gerald R. Ford also suffered a fire this week. The carrier has been at sea for over 8 months, well past its scheduled maintenance period. As the war grinds on with no clear end in sight, sections of the ruling class are now openly agitating for the deployment of US ground troops. The Wall Street Journal warned on Thursday that ending the war prematurely would be a strategic disaster. This is the danger Mr. Trump faces as he contemplates when to end the war, the Journal wrote. Iran has threatened Gulf oil production for decades, and that potential threat has built a risk premium into the oil price. But if the war ends with that threat having been proven in practice, with the US unable to do anything about it, the US will be the strategic loser. The Journal argued that the war's original aims, eliminating Iran's missile threat, its nuclear program, and its navy, are no longer sufficient. Iran's counterpunch means that reopening the strait and reducing Iran's veto power over its traffic will now have to be a goal. As a conflict evolves, war aims have to change as well. This, the Journal continued, may mean a longer campaign than Mr. Trump initially anticipated, as the US and Israel secure the area of the strait and increase the target list to include more of Iran's drone units and individual IRGC and Basij units. The editorial went further, calling for the seizure of Karg Island, Iran's main oil export terminal. It may also require taking control of Iran's main oil export terminal at Karg Island. Iran's oil sales to China continue to sustain the regime. Trump, the Journal noted, has been careful not to rule out deploying special forces for discrete and vital missions, and perhaps he has had Karg in mind. Its conclusion, winning now, includes reopening the Strait of Hormuz. In other words, the most influential mouthpiece of American finance capital is demanding an expansion of the war, ground troops, the seizure of sovereign territory, and an open-ended military occupation of the world's most critical energy choke point. The administration has not ruled out conscription. Asked about a military draft on Fox News on March 8th, White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said it is not part of the current plan right now, but the president, again, wisely keeps his options on the table. Meanwhile, the bombing of Iran continues to intensify. Besant announced on Fox Business last week that the US will carry out our biggest bombing campaign yet. The US has struck over 5,000 targets since February 28th. Over 1,348 Iranian civilians have been killed, including hundreds of children. At least 12,000 have been wounded. The UNHCR reports 3.2 million Iranians have been internally displaced. Israeli officials privately assess the regime is unlikely to fall soon, with Netanyahu conceding uncertainty on regime change. The war has simultaneously expanded into Lebanon, where Israel launched an intensive bombing campaign and ground incursion after Hezbollah resumed fire on March the 2nd. Israeli forces have pushed into southern Lebanon along several fronts, establishing at least 18 military positions inside Lebanese territory, the first ground operations since the November 2024 ceasefire. Israeli strikes hit central Beirut on Wednesday, 1 kilometre from the government headquarters. Over 680 people have been killed in Lebanon, including 98 children, and more than 800,000 displaced. Israel's military chief said the campaign will not be short. Defence Minister Katz ordered preparations to expand the ground offensive on Wednesday. Workers at occupied plant in Matamoros, Mexico, denounce being hung out to dry by independent union. By Andrea Lobo. 6 weeks have passed since First Brands abruptly shut 6 maquiladora plants in northern Mexico and threw more than 5,000 workers in Matamoros, Ciudad Juarez, and Mexicali into the street without salaries or severance pay. About 1,200 at the Tritonix Cardoni plant in Matamoros continue to occupy the plant, but are being left to starve on the picket line, underscoring the urgent need for an international rank-and-file fight by auto workers across North America. From the beginning, the World Socialist website has stressed that this fight can be won only through an international strategy, uniting First Brands workers with other auto workers across North America and beyond against a transnational jobs massacre, with major North American brake and auto parts suppliers being shut down overnight. This struggle has vast international implications for workers on both sides of the US-Mexico border. On January 28th, First Brands announced an orderly accelerated shutdown of major North American operations, including Brake Parts Inc., Cardoni, and Autolite, after filing for Chapter 11 in September 2025, and warning that up to 13,000 jobs worldwide could be destroyed. That same night, workers in Matamoros, Ciudad Juarez, and Mexicali independently launched plant occupations to stop machinery from being removed, declaring in Matamoros that no machines will leave the building. Today, these initial occupations have been wound down in Ciudad Juarez and Mexicali, thanks above all to the intervention of the so-called independent union bureaucracy and local authorities, while Tritonix workers in Matamoros remain alone guarding the plant with dwindling resources. After repeatedly postponing action on March the 6th, the independent union, SNITUS, led by labour lawyer Susana Prieto Terrazas, formally announced the beginning of a strike at the already occupied plant in Tritonix, where about 1,200 workers remain formally employed. 200 supervising staff signed conciliation agreements. At a meeting last Thursday on the picket line, Prieto reportedly assured them that the facility, with everything inside, belongs to them. But workers have not been given any real control over the plant or its assets. The factory produced brake components for automakers, including General Motors and Ford, integral parts of the North American supply chain. Explaining the procedure, she said that a labour court will have to recognise that workers have a justified cause to suspend work, while a parallel process, known as an incident to determine responsibility for the strike, takes place, in which the judge decides whether the company, or the workers, are responsible for the conflict. While warning that this could take 4 to 5 months, Prieto pledged to ask the judge to provisionally accumulate back wages, while the case is resolved, and if the company is found responsible, to order severance and other indemnities. She further promised to request that the judge seize all company assets to guarantee payment. In other words, the strike is no genuine offensive to save jobs or expand the struggle, but a tightly controlled legal mechanism subordinating workers to a months-long court process in Mexico and the United States. This is under conditions where first Brand's crooked executives, indicted in the US on federal fraud and conspiracy charges, are already stripping assets across borders. Knowing full well that workers had already spent more than a month without pay on the line, she used her latest trip to Matamoros to callously scold them for not showing up for their assigned shifts to guard the gates, especially at night. Her union, however, has done absolutely nothing to guarantee food, transportation, or income for those she is keeping on watch. On Thursday, March 12th, less than a week after the official strike began, a Tritonix worker told this reporter, quote, "The strike continues, but there are many co-workers who can no longer keep supporting it. I am one of them. My union is great, but I was no longer able to help because I don't have money for the bus fares." Unquote. Workers have thus been left hung out to dry for over a month after the January 28 shutdown, before a strike was even called, under conditions where they are being asked to maintain 24-hour guard duty with no organised support. Asked what plan the union had communicated, the worker replied with a sad emoji, quote, "To wait. But I don't believe this can be resolved. The only thing I can say is that we are in God's hands. We all filed individual lawsuits, but there is still no answer. I've been here for 13 years, and I know co-workers with more than 20 years in the company." Unquote. He added that the union has made no effort to appeal for economic support or broader strike action from other workers in Mexico, the US, or internationally. The present impasse is the outcome of a long process in which Prieto and the so-called independent unions were brought forward precisely to demobilize our movement toward rank-and-file control and international unity. In 2019, the so-called 2032 wildcat strikes in Matamoros saw 70,000 maquiladora workers across dozens of plants walk out for a 100% wage increase and to expel the corrupt CTM unions. They marched to the US border bridges, appealing directly to American workers. It was precisely when the movement began to link up with an international socialist perspective advanced by the WSWS that Prieto intervened to corral it behind appeals to President Andre Manuel Lopez Obrador, preserve CTM structures, and negotiate a far more limited 20% raise and a 30,000 peso bonus. Companies responded with mass victimizations. Plants like Avant, Componentes Universales, and Edemsa were shut down, with the latter two refusing to pay severance. Now, one of the plants directly controlled by the union, created by Prieto, has been closed, and the union stands exposed as wholly incapable of defending workers' livelihoods. A critical measure of Prieto's treacherous role is the fact that SNITIS only secured the Tritonix contract through an international labour complaint filed by the AFL-CIO and the US government under the USMCA in 2021, with the Biden administration openly intervening to replace the hated CTM with US-vetted independent charros, that is, corporatist bureaucrats, as part of a broader strategy to channel Mexican workers behind pro-imperialist nationalist unions and head off the development of genuine rank-and-file internationalist organizations of struggle. How the other occupations were shut down. In Ciudad Juarez, roughly 3,000 First Brands workers lost their jobs. Initial protests and occupations were rapidly smothered with the help of the local government, which organized job fairs for a few hundred workers to transfer them into low-wage positions at other plants, stores, and workplaces. In Mexicali, where 405 workers lost their jobs at First Brands' Auto Light plant, The FASIM Independent Union followed Synthesis' model, filing a lawsuit for preventative retention of assets to pay severance. Local media now report that these workers are being blacklisted as troublemakers by other employers simply for having worked at Autolite and taken part in the struggle. Even if it is entirely clear that the company is responsible for the shutdown, there is no guarantee that judges, who have historically defended corporate interests, will rule in favour of the workers, or that any assets will remain once the legal process ends. The International Road Forward. The perspective required by First Brands workers was outlined in a February 19th statement by Will Lehman, a worker at Mack Trucks and socialist candidate for the United Auto Workers president in the United States. Lehman wrote, quote, "I salute the courageous factory occupations spreading across northern Mexico, where workers are taking collective action to stop mass layoffs and defend their livelihoods against US-based corporations. Workers in the United States, Mexico, and Canada must build direct unity from below. That means forming rank-and-file committees in every plant, linking them across borders, sharing information in real time, and preparing coordinated action so no workforce stands alone. If we remain divided, we will be driven into a race to the bottom. If we unite across borders and build our own organizations of struggle, we can defend every job and fight for a future based on human need, not corporate profit." Unquote. This is the only way forward. The occupation of Tridnix can and must be transformed into a conscious centre of international resistance by electing a rank-and-file committee independent of SNITIS, directly linked to the struggle of auto workers in the US and beyond through the International Workers Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.